It's a very, very warm welcome to Colin Peacock for Midweek Media Watch.
Hi, Karen.
Good holiday?
Yeah, not too bad. I had a pretty decent break. Went on a couple of cycling trips where there was kind of no opportunity really to engage with the media. It was really in the middle of nowhere. I usually do try and pick up local papers, get a bit of local media places where I am, but this time it was really difficult. I just wasn't in enough small towns, and often it was pretty much impossible to find a local paper. So pretty much, break from the media, really.
You're supposed to be on holiday, Colin.
Yeah, I did make a couple of trips while I was off work, but in Wellington to a place I think you're featuring later this hour, the Tip Shop.
Yes, that's right.
Yep, we'll get my bike tyres there. People check out or recycle some pretty decent high quality tyres with a bit of tread that are good for doing up old bikes.
So good to know.
One thing, when I was saying I do try to pick up on local media when I do get out of my urban bubble in the summer, while I found it hard to get local news, I did see quite a few sort of QAnon anti-media banners about the place, sometimes in the middle of nowhere, and a fair few banners and billboards for Counterspin Media, the sort of conspiracy-based far-right outlet, so that wasn't so great. The most alarming one was Tomonui. It was right in the middle of the main street, a thing the size of a two-car garage, just about right in the main street opposite the police station.
What did it say?
Oh, that one was, the weird thing about it was it had the Labour Party slogan right at the top. It almost looked like a Labour billboard. What? And as you get closer, some of your listeners will have seen this right there in the main drag. But it had, it was about the baby in what they call the tainted blood case.
Oh, yes.
The one where they wanted vaccine-free donors to supply the for the baby's surgery, and it said, it's our baby, your baby, our choice, was the slogan. So basically saying, Labour is interfering in this case, which, Counterspin Media got. And then if you looked at the billboard from the back end, it was a kind of triangle sort of pyramid shaped thing. It was claiming to be the people's platform, offering fact-based, evidence-based journalism. But I don't think that's really what Counterspin offers.
Last year, after your summer break, we spoke about some of the local and low-power FM radio stations that you came across on your travels. What about this time?
Yeah, no, not this time, because I wasn't driving and able to tune the radio, and pretty much impossible to pick up on a bike. But I did take one car trip through Whanganui, and good old Roxy Radio, which is on Glasgow Street off Somme Parade on that side of the river. That's claims to be Whanganui's oldest private station. That's still going. And I looked online to see if it was actually doing a live stream yet, but I don't think it is. I think you really have to be in the vicinity to hear it. But it's quite cool. It's good, the great mix of music that it plays. And when I was looking it up online, I saw on the very same frequency is on Palmerston North is 2XS. So they regard themselves as a bit of a sister station, I think, and we're offering them congrats. And 2XS runs on solar power, they say, which is quite a cool day. Can I read you this rather stirring Facebook post that they put out to their local businesses, 2XS?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, they said this. Firstly, we are locally owned, not by a group of investors bleeding local money away from our economy. Who is that really helping? And then they said, secondly, we are locally managed and make decisions and can react immediately to our listeners and clients without having to get the okay from a program director or whatever flashy middle management title they give themselves, who's based in Auckland. And then thirdly, really laying it on here, we are not networked from Auckland. We don't pretend we're local for 4 hours with the community at the forefront of what we do, and then after those 4 hours, drop you like a bad date. So if you own a business or know someone who does, consider supporting your local broadcasters. After all, we're here for you, with that ad revenue being returned back to the local economy. Fighting talk, hey.
Great piece of copy.
Yeah.
Who wrote that? Get them, give them a job.
Yeah, 2XS Palmerston North.
So, tough news for staff of a bigger radio broadcaster this week, though. MediaWorks warning staff that jobs are going to go.
Yeah, not good New Year news from them. This was the chief executive, Cam Wallace, from MediaWorks, in an email to staff that quickly became widely reported, saying up to 90 roles will go, including ones that are currently vacant. Apparently, some dozens of jobs that are maybe have been deliberately held vacant there. I don't know, but that will be included in this, and that's pretty big in a company that we don't know for sure, but we estimate would be around about 500. People strong. So if you go back a couple of years or a little bit more, May 2020, and of course that was in the COVID lockdown period, commercial media then were really not knowing what the impact was going to be of lockdowns, but clearly it wasn't good at that time. A lot of them were talking about rescoping their businesses to adjust to that. So MediaWorks at that time cut 130 people, so even bigger. That, of course, was at a time when it was a much bigger company. It owned TV3 and the other associated TV channels that have since been sold on to the Discovery and now twinned up with Warner Brothers company that operates 3 and Bravo and those other channels now. But MediaWorks currently does still own, you know, half of the country's radio stations, roughly. Big music networks like The Edge, The Breeze, The Rock, and the talk radio outfit Today FM, the streaming Rover platform as well. And the other part of the business actually is QMS, which is a billboard outdoor advertising business as well. But, you know, economic conditions being what they are, that will be getting squeezed as well.
Nothing new there then, really. They had a stretch at one time where they had 6-month contracts, no contracts at all. So really it's all about the money, isn't it, or lack of?
Yeah, I think cost-cutting is basically the name of the game. And that email to staff, as reported in the media from Tuesday, was quoting Cam Wallace, the chief executive, saying, "We're not immune to the impacts of current economic factors and a likely recession this year and a dampening of demand from advertisers across the board." But he made the point in that email that staff were 2/3 of MediaWorks costs, the labour-related, I think was the term he used. So if you look at last year's figures, the revenue is still there for the company, $203 million, which is fairly healthy, but the expenses also rose up to $205 million. So a bit of a deficit there. And it was noted by a lot of commentators on this news saying, look, there were a lot of millions, something reportedly between $6 and $9 million, getting the new talk station Today FM running earlier last year. So that's certainly true, but they would have had ongoing costs from their existing and previous talk station as well. So I think the point is that radio is still a lucrative business, but overall revenue is hard to grow. There's another big aggressive competitor in that market. It's kind of a duopoly, the NZME radio stations. And, you know, clearly costs are rising along with everything else in every other business, and ad income is likely to fall across the board, you know, because of that.
Crowded radio market always has been in New Zealand. What are the numbers for Today FM? How are they doing in surveys?
Well, the last surveys weren't great, so the listeners had fallen from the previous one. But it's a little bit hard to measure because, as the company itself has pointed out when reporting on those soft results, let's call them, previously the station was called Magic Talk and it was twinned up with a music station, Magic Music. So it made it really hard to decouple the figures. But, you know, clearly it's talk radio opponent in commercial terms. News Talk ZB still has a very big audience and a strong lead on it. So, yeah, it hasn't really paid off yet by any means. But last September, when those, I think the most recent quarterly results came out, that the station made a point of saying this is a long-term play for us. You know, we won't know how it's tracking really until we have a few more surveys. So, you know, they're saying they're committed to it. And whereas, you know, some commentators are pointed to the amount of money they may or may not have spent setting it up and that would have made their financial problems a bit more acute. They're saying, you know, that's an investment in the long term. And, you know, if you're going to be a major, you know, one of two major commercial radio broadcasters in a national market like this, you know, I guess they're figuring, you know, you have to have a credible, effective talk radio station of some kind, at least.
HR will be very busy then at the moment.
Yeah, well, so far they seem to be following that kind of, you know, what doesn't sound too cynical, but the kind of HR playbook that media companies, or even perhaps any company where staff is the major cost and asset. You know, first they announce they're going to have to do this and they give staff an indication of, you know, how big it might be, hence saying up to 90 roles in this case, rather than trying to fudge that. And then they say, look, they're consulting with their staff and they won't be able to talk about it to other media or other stakeholders or whatever until they've done that, to be fair to them, and perhaps not to jeopardise their own position by saying something that might make those negotiations or consultations a bit more awkward. So, yeah, I don't expect they'll be talking about it publicly in the coming weeks. And then somewhere down the track, we'll find that, you know, staff have been informed that, you know, a plan is going ahead. But, you know, there were some comments, you know, some phrases in that statement from the chief executive talking about In fact, one that was released to an RNZ after they inquired, talking about rescoping their company and reviewing our operating model. And that does sound a little ominous, as if, you know, they will actually be reconsidering what they're investing in and possibly, you know, considering at least closing some services or networks.
Do you think it's like the delayed effects of the pandemic as well as cost cutting? And is it an indication of pressure on other media companies?
Yeah, well, other media companies will certainly be looking at it, because some of those same pressures, you know, will be occurring to them if advertising across the board softens and, you know, consumer confidence falls, as well as, you know, the marketers and media buyers that send the money around. So if you go back to last year, the Business Desk organisation did an interview with Cam Wallace as well, and they wrote about Oaktree Capital, the private equity firm that has the biggest stake in MediaWorks. And their writer, Daniel Dunkley, made the point that, you know, a lot of these vulture funds that buy these assets like media companies for possibly a lower price in the market, they, you know, they obviously buy them wanting to sell them on, and that Oaktree's owned it for a lot longer than most funds you would expect to hold them. So they probably want to get it in shape to sell. But yeah, if you go back to October, Cam Wallace gave Business Desk a fairly kind of bleak assessment, saying it's taken several months for the weaker economy to be felt through the ad market. It's building now. The effects of higher inflation will kick in and trickle into the ad market. Discretionary spend for consumers and travel and entertainment, that's all going to slow down. So he was giving that warning in October last year, and that was just 1 month after some of their other executives were saying, after, you know, trumpeting good results for their music networks and the audience survey, saying, look, things are getting better, you know, entertainment events are happening, consumer confidence, you know, everything's moving again. The commercial director said in September, COVID restrictions are lifting, life's returning to normal, people are moving and spending, you know, painting a very positive picture. But, you know, the chief executive was saying things in October that were mirrored in that statement about the job cuts that came out on Tuesday.
And some changes here at RNZ for the new year, Colin. The merger is still on or off the table. We don't know yet, but staff changes.
Yeah, staff changes and programming changes. So there will be two new voices from Auckland on Morning Report. Ingrid Hipkiss will be one of the main Morning Report presenters alongside Corin Dan, broadcasting out of Wellington. And she's, you know, well known from days on television with MediaWorks and TV3. And also the current host of First Up, Nathan Rarere, he's going to be a sports presenter for Morning Report. In fact, he's been on already. So a more sort of engaged and lively and perhaps non-traditional sports style, coming in as a presenter rather than a kind of sports news reader or bulletin reader, but also out of Auckland. And that's something RNZ's wanted to do for a while, make that morning program sound like it's got more of an Auckland presence. Other changes coming up, though. Marnie Dunlop, it's been announced she's going to leave in, I think, mid-March. And she's been with RNZ for more than 10 years now. She's the current producer and presenter of the Midday News, Te Porongo o Te Potatanga. And mid-March it is, I think, she left. She's had other roles too, like Māori News Director. And, you know, in the more than a decade that she's been here, she's done a lot to bring more te ao Māori and te reo Māori knowledge to other reporters as well. So she will be much missed. And Napier-based reporter Tom Kitchen, he's going to be one of the new hosts of the co-production The Detail. Also an opportunity for someone in the Hawke's Bay to report for RNZ.
Where's Marnie going to?
It's not been announced, but just says she's taking a break and exploring new opportunities. So I'm not aware of that. She is, of course, as has been reported, partners with Kira Tapu Allen, Cabinet Minister. So yeah, possibly something outside of media. I'm just not sure.
And an ex-RNZer appointed to the top job at the Capital's Daily Paper.
Yeah, Caitlin Cherry, former head of content at RNZ National, and formerly before that, executive director of Afternoons. Before that, we were colleagues on Morning Report about almost 20 years ago when I first pitched up at RNZ. And I think she hadn't joined that long before me as well. She actually left RNZ, I think it was about 2 years ago now, maybe less, and has been the head of content at Consumer. But yeah, now appointed to succeed Anna Fifield at the Dom Post. And she has gone back to the Washington Post, who she worked for before being appointed at the Dom Post. But she's going to be their Asia Pacific editor, but covering that entire region from here in Wellington.
Well, you're a Wellingtonian, Colin. How's the appointment gone down?
Well, I think Caitlin hasn't started yet. I think her social media postings show she's still on holiday. I think that's right. But Anna Fifield's been much missed and farewelled already. But interestingly, one former editor of the paper has expressed a concern about Caitlin's appointment. That's Carl Dufresne on his blog. He points out that she's got no print experience, he believes, and this could be a first for a major New Zealand daily paper. Now, he might be right about that, I don't know, but yeah, he wrote it like, this could be a move so bold and visionary, its brilliance isn't immediately obvious. On the other hand, it could be just plain dumb. It could be interpreted, says Carl, as confirmation that Stuff isn't really interested in print. And the company often gives the impression, he says, intentionally or otherwise, that it regards newspapers as an encumbrance. So I don't know, but look, these days when so much production is digital and the content also multimedia, you know, Stuff has a digital first policy. I don't know whether that distinction is really as important as he suggests. And of course, part of the business at Consumer is also producing that monthly magazine for the members, which goes back all the way, I think, to the 1970s, which is a print product. And, you know, Caitlin will be well aware of that newspaper dilemma, that even in the digital age, the local papers and their display ads still bring in more money than digital advertising and content. And she's spent a lot of time in and around newsrooms and knows, you know, even if it's not a print newsroom, knows absolutely about that kind of nexus between, you know, entertaining stuff and feature type material and investigation and outright, you know, hard news. She understands that very, very well. And, you know, she's lived, I think, you know, at least the last 20 years that I've known her here in Wellington, deeply embedded in the place. And yeah, I think she'll attack that job with gusto.
Well, I'm assuming that the Prime Minister resigning reached you wherever you were during your break. But did the timing catch you out along with the rest of the media?
Well, I was back from the back blocks with my bike. So I was back in Wellington when it actually happened. But I was out on a bit of a bike ride on my holiday when it happened. I arrived home to find out when the news was a couple of hours old. That's part of the story in a way, watching a media that wasn't tuned up for the year, you know, half of it still on holiday, trying to scramble to cover a big political story. And, you know, I did think about Tova O'Brien on Today FM. I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. She began the day before because I heard her on the air and she was overjoyed to be back on the air. And I was thinking about a year earlier when she was prevented from being on air because of her restraint of trade clause enforced by her former employer. So she couldn't actually start broadcasting till March. But this time she was, you know, back on air with her daily show earlier than, you know, a lot of other broadcasters or regular shows. But, you know, the MPs were caught out as well because they were at their caucus retreat in Napier and many of them appeared to be, you know, absolutely taken by surprise by the news. And Chris Hipkins this week told the AM show the PM had given him a sort of a heads up about what she might be thinking. But he clearly didn't look dressed for facing the cameras when News Hub's political reporter Amelia Wade caught up with him in Napier in the street with her camera rolling.
Oh, come on, don't interview me when I'm in my tracksuit. That's not fair.
How are you feeling today?
Good. Very good. It's a beautiful day in Napier. I'm enjoying some fresh air.
Do you have a lot of support for step in as leader?
I'm not going to go into that. And I will see you at the airport when I'm appropriately dressed. And I'll be very happy to talk to you at that point.
Surprised she recognised him. Black hoodie, wraparound sunglasses and a baseball cap.
Yeah, speed dealer sunnies, I think some people call them. But yeah, the same with Michael Wood, right? He was filmed in Napier, tracked down by the media, making phone calls in the street, wearing what I think looked like a kind of short-sleeved, you know, kind of casual shirt, anyway, let's put it like that, a wide-brim sun hat, sunglasses, you know, not looking especially, you know, political or prime ministerial. But I'm going to sound like a bit of a crank with this, but, you know, a lot of political reporters memed this and it was all over social media very quickly and jokes and captions and stuff. And obviously this is a side issue and in no way a biggie, but I just thought it was a bit lame in that, you know, MPs should be able to wear what they want. They're at a work do, off-site, first day back, summertime. I just don't think reporters should have seized on it and made a big deal of, I mean, what they were wearing. And I do wonder if the tables were turned, if MPs decided to, you know, pump out on their social feeds, you know, mocking pictures and of what the reporters were wearing when, you know, they were at work in the summer, would they like that?
Labor have played up to it very well, though. They've got the hat and the sunnies on Trade Me, and they're using the exposure to sort of embellish Hipkins' boy from the hut identity. I see it's up to $1,550, both of them, the cap and the sunnies, $1,550 at the moment.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, I think, raising funds for the Labor Party. I think I'm right about that. So, yeah, if maybe they are only too happy to get the reporters' attention on the clothing. But, you know, this is from the text of the Trade Me entry. You're bidding on the cap and sunnies Hipkins wore in this iconic early morning interview about being becoming Labor's new leader. You know, black and wraparound hut issue headgear gives you the cred to hustle a great new price on new mags, audition for West Side Season 7 or become Prime Minister. I don't know. Look, yeah, obviously it's a joke, but you know, I just think, honestly think, one of the good things about New Zealand is that hardly anybody cares what anybody else looks like or wears, especially in summertime. And I just think everyone, even MPs, should have the right to go casual without the media or anyone else really making a big deal of it. And actually, it isn't just me who's feeling cranky about this. Gordon Campbell on Scoop, he had a pop at RNZ's Wallace Chapman on Monday's panel, this was, for his reaction. He accused Wallace of a bit of fogyism.
What about the so-called optics, I guess, Grant? Here you've got a guy who feels very comfortable in a black hoodie, very comfortable in a hat and wraparounds. I mean, quite something. He obviously does a bit of DIY. He's a sort of person you could see down at your local Bunnings.
Right.
Yeah, the bigger issue, obviously, Colin, at stake is clearly the running of the country.
Yes.
You've said before that political reporters are heavily focused on party leaders, and with the election coming up, the departure of Jacinda Ardern must have sent that into overdrive, hence all this publicity.
Yeah, indeed, it does. I mean, yeah, I know I have talked about it before. You know, that they seem to talk and focus on the leaders so much. But you know, some commentators, interestingly, kind of echoed National's line, or Christopher Luxon, their leader in particular, who was asked, you know, how does this change? He said, well, nothing changes with the change of leader. We've still got the same party to fight and the same mission in an election year. But I have honestly been surprised by just how definitive some of the political writers and commentators have been in saying that this is, you know, an election deciding change of leadership. So on the day it happened, last Thursday, I think that's right, Patrick Smellie of Business Desk, seasoned writer, the headline on his piece was Ardern's resignation hands the 2023 election to National. He wrote, barring extraordinary incompetence by the National Party, Jacinda Ardern has all but handed the election to a National-led government with her unexpected resignation this morning. Andrea Vance of Stuff, the same day, again, very experienced political writer, Jacinda Ardern and Grant Robertson just conceded the election. That's the headline. And she wrote, Labor's election hopes just crash-landed. Her popularity, so inextricably linked to the fortunes of the party, leaves a vacuum which her successor will struggle to fill and in which chaos and restless egos will thrive. Ardern was still Labor's best hope against National. Now, you know, her successor wasn't even known at that point. In fact, both those opinions were written before, you know, whoever the candidate might be to replace the pair were known to fight the election. It kind of reminded me, like, when Judith Collins won the National Party leadership, you know, then you had political reporters saying, she'll fight, she'll scrap, this will be a, you know, she'll take on Ardern, this will be a contest in 2020. Of course, events changed. You know, COVID happened and their 2020 election was completely not a contest or not the one they had in mind. Anything could happen between now and October, and I just don't know quite why they're so definitive.
Did that change at all after they named Chris Hipkins?
A little bit. So after Chris Hipkins was selected, Andrea Vance wrote another column. This was for her regular Sunday Times one in the weekend. Two boring men in suits arguing about the best route out of a recession might just be the meat and potatoes election we all need. Now, maybe a bit tongue-in-cheek there, but again, that focus on the two leaders, you know, two Chrises, you know, as if that's what the contest is. For many voters, as again, we're people, but they see us as just voters. You know, elections are much more about just the two-party leaders and who they might be and how they might argue. We have two votes at election time, vote for a local candidate and a party. Both could have an impact on what the outcome is. It's not just about two leaders that we see so much in the news and the reporting. In the same vein, now that you've triggered me, Tracy Watkins in the same paper, the Sunday Star Times, she's a former political editor of Stuff, of course. Her editorial was headlined, Labour's new leader, a game changer, or the party's death knell? Question mark. Now, I'm sort of thinking, the party's death knell, I mean, a change of leader will not be the death knell for a 100 and something year movement with thousands of members that's been in government, you know, four or five times. That's ridiculous. I mean, when she says the death knell, that's just a reference to the election prospects. You know, again, I just think they're too focused on the next election and the party leaders that will lead their parties into it. But politics and elections, if you want to focus on those, are so much more than that to, I think, you know, the audience they're talking to.
So both commentators and reporters obviously prepared to stick their necks on the line and saying that, you know, no Ardern, no chance for Labour in the election, but obviously at the risk of being wrong. So too much focus on the personalities, not the policies.
Yeah, maybe, or even the politicians. You know, even it's not the, but just those two, you know, those two major party leaders. But I've got one more example. This is one from the radio. So this is Rachel Smalley on Today FM last Friday. Now, by the way, you know, she did actually pick that Ardern would quit before Christmas and wasn't out by much because it was, you know, after the break. So fair play to her. I did point that out on the last Media Watch of last year that Ardern had indeed made it to Christmas in charge. But anyhow, on Friday, last Friday on the radio on her Today FM show, Rachel Smalley said she didn't believe that Labour could now stand up without Ardern and say that they had any public mandate to continue to lead. And then she went on to say this.
In 2020, we didn't elect Labour. We elected Jacinda Ardern. Make no mistake about that. We gave her a single-party majority leadership government. There is no doubt we elected her, not Labour. Now, our new Prime Minister will have no option but to channel all of their energy into trying to retain power in an election year. The economy will have to wait.
Now, I think that is just a huge stretch. You know, we, the people, didn't elect Jacinda Ardern. Elected Jacinda Ardern, she says, not Labour. I mean, a majority of voters picked the Labour Party that Ardern led. And then they picked another local candidate where they lived who may or may not have been Labour. I just think that's just another example of that sort of very, very intense focus that some in the media have developed with those political party leaders and, you know, absolutely in particular with Jacinda Ardern.
Well, with the change of leadership and the political legacy of Jacinda Ardern preoccupying the media, but has there been analysis of her impact on the media and the media's impact on her?
Yeah, there's been a little bit, and maybe that's to come. I might try and get into that a bit with the Media Watch in the weekend. But, I mean, that sort of is appropriate in the grounds that, you know, she was herself a media phenomenon. And, of course, you know, the political writers that do talk about this focus or have this focus on her can point to, you know, the extraordinary rise in the party's fortunes once she became leader, you know, partly because of her presence in the media, and that's undeniable, but, you know, also because of COVID and the national tragedies, you know, Whakaari White Island, March 15th massacre, you know, that gave her, again, so much more media presence. And the crisis management coming across that. The spin-offs, Duncan Greaves had a go writing an interesting piece also about Ardern's own handling of the mainstream media, whilst also using social media and particularly, you know, Facebook Live, really interestingly, you know, using that so effectively to communicate with a lot of people, whether it was effective or not, I don't know, but certainly willing to use it. Even at the time when she was, you know, joining together an international campaign, the Christchurch call to hold the likes of Facebook and social media accountable for the extremism that they, you know, that they fostered, which, you know, played that role on in March 19th the events in Christchurch. So, you know, he also addressed that odd phenomenon of those 1 p.m. press conferences, those exposed, you know, a captive audience to her. That was live television day after day, almost every day, every weekday in some weeks, and how the press pack and her both copped criticism for people often seeing, you know, live and raw press conferences in a way they weren't used to seeing. So, for example, you know, one of the media who made an issue, Michael Morrow of News Hub, he argued quite cogently that they were ineffective in a way. You got a limited chance to ask a question, and then there were no more questions answered until maybe the next day's press conference, where you may not even get a question in. And that wasn't very effective if you had serious questions about the handling of the COVID response that required answers. And then News Talk ZB's Barry Soper fell out with the Prime Minister over that, you know, the pecking order, the so-called Toba then Jessica thing, and who got to ask questions, and started to agitate in the press conferences after that. It was interesting. This is the middle of last year. So Jacinda Ardern was asked if she was a media control freak, and it was Jamie Mackay of NZME's rural show The Country asking the question. Quite a long clip, this, but I think the question and the answer is quite interesting.
But do you have favourites? Do you play Jessica and Tova? Because I'll put this to you. Barry Soper and News Talk ZB would have more listeners than, say, News Hub, TV3 or whatever you call them, would have viewers.
So this is slightly bordering on the inane now. So, yes, I go to those who operate. So I have a press conference at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We know that the TVs have to get their broadcast in at 6. So it's just practical because they have broadcast time. That's why I also went to Barry Third that day. He also has a deadline that he runs to. So, no, it's just practical. I think, unfortunately, we've got people who have been doing press conferences for a long time who are now starting to just over-analyse things where there is nothing to analyse.
Slightly bordering on the inane.
Yeah, and it was interesting because it's quite pointed language, you know, so she obviously wanted to push back a little bit on that. But that clip was posted by The Country Show on its Facebook page. Over 800 comments in response to it. And just the vast, vast majority, you know, quite bitter and not convinced by Ardern's argument. They really said, we have been watching this. She is controlling. They clearly saw it. You know, another way. And we've seen a lot of that, you know, sentiment when people talk about, you know, the backlash and the waning of Ardern's popularity or the souring of it or whatever. You know, some of it came out in those comments. And as she's trying to say there, that's just a result of, in some cases, of course, there's an element of control. She's leading the press conference and she is directing the questioning, undeniably. But, yeah, people just seeing the press conferences live that they didn't used to see. Quite a moment in New Zealand media history, really, and she was at the heart of it.
And talking about New Zealand media history, Colin, I just wanted to end on very sad news to hear of the death of Ewing Stevens.
Yeah, I wondered if you'd come across him because yes, you know, you would have been at the same network.
Yes, I worked with him at Radio Live. He was doing Midnight to Dawn. Just a marvellous man. Just an absolute true gentleman, brilliant broadcaster.
Yeah, I didn't actually know about it at all because I think he's been off the air for some time. But I heard, listening to a bit of News Talk ZB, I heard their host over the break. This is actually on their Nostalgia, their weekend show called In My Day. I don't think he's the regular host, Roman Travers. But he referenced Ewing's death like this, and there's a reason that Machine Gun by the Commodores, the old Ready to Roll theme, is playing in the background, is because it was that nostalgia show. But here's the clip.
No other media source has run the story at all, and I find that highly offensive. Ewing Stevens was a broadcaster with over 60 years in the game, and he was loved and listened to by many over the years he spent doing talkback radio. Much loved host across various forms of talkback radio, and gee, 60 years in the game.
He was so incredibly popular. You know, he got those ratings up at that time of night. He was listened to by anyone who was listening to radio in the small hours would be listening to Ewing, and he was such a good broadcaster.
Yeah, so he died on Sunday the 15th of January, his 97th year. It was in Dunedin. And when I look back, found he was at Radio Pacific, you know, the original station. He still has a LinkedIn page that's up, which just lists his career in two stages. It says, talkback host, BDUXNZ, from January 1979, so that would have been Radio Pacific, through to November 2015, 36 years, 11 months. So maybe he stepped back in November 2015. And after that, he lists his occupation as relaxing, retired talkback host from November 2015.
A lovely man. Gee, oh, rest in peace, Ewing. And yeah, thank you for so much. He used to do voice checks too for the staff at Live. And he always had, you know, he really picked the thing that you needed to know. His expertise was just incredible.
Yeah, he got a Radio Award, New Zealand Radio Award in 2012 for Lifetime Achievement. That was after 56 years on the air. And at that point, he said, I'm planning on remaining in broadcasting until I'm the oldest broadcaster in the world. So 3 more years on top of that. He might have just made it. You know, you never know.
Oh, well, I'm really sad to hear that news. But thank you very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sure thing. Thanks a lot, Karen.
Colin Peacock.